You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
ACT Party leader David Seymour has had a busy couple of weeks. Firstly, he has been the sole voice of opposition in Parliament out of all 120 MPs to the government's gun law reform legislation, which passed its final reading last night. Yes, 119-1. He says it's not because he's against changes to our gun laws, but because he doesn't think there has been enough time to accurately discuss the nuances of what is a very technical bill. But Mr. Seymour has also been in the media's focus because of his end-of-life choice bill. It passed its first reading at the end of 2017 before going to select committee. Just this week, the Justice Select Committee has reported back on the bill, making only minor suggestions for how it should progress, something which Mr. Seymour has welcomed. I spoke to David about both of these issues in some depth this morning, so buckle yourselves in. Like I said, this is a long one. I started by talking about gun laws. Is he really just against the parliamentary process that has seen this bill become a law in less than 2 weeks?
That's absolutely right. I do object to the way that the government has gone about this law. I think it is excluding people, it is divisive, it's offensive to parliamentary democracy. It's everything that the Prime Minister's response to the Christchurch tragedy is not. It's a glaring exception, and it's gone against the principles for which she has been praised. And it's totally unnecessary in the short term, because in the week after the tragedy, an order in council, that's I guess like a mini law that the government can pass at any time, said that you can't have a semi-automatic weapon unless you are an E-category holder, license holder that is, and restricting the guns to people like that was a sensible first step to get dangerous weapons out of mainstream circulation. Only 7,500 people have those licences. There's extreme vetting to have one, and you have to have every weapon that you own registered to your licence. That was a really good start, and that order in council doesn't expire until June 30 next year. That actually gave the government time to do a more long-term, inclusive, considered lawmaking process, and funnily enough, that's exactly what they're proposing to do. Almost as soon as this law was passed, they now want to start legislating a new law. So you have to ask yourself, what was the point of the last 9 days of ramming through Parliament with almost no consultation a law that has basically told a couple of 100,000 people that they are bad people? It seems that it's been about political theatre rather than public safety.
But pushing through bills quickly or under urgency, I mean, this isn't the first time it's happened. Is this something that you and the ACT Party have always been opposed to?
Well, absolutely. Look, there are times to use urgency, and I'll give you an example. I think it was around about 2016 when we were in government. Somebody pointed out there was a loophole in the law that meant that speeding tickets were actually illegal. Technically, the police had no legal basis to stop people speeding. Obviously, that would be a huge problem. We couldn't wait 6 months to close that loophole, because in the interceding period, you would have got all sorts of idiots speeding around the country and killing people. So we used urgency, and we passed the law in about an hour, because it was an obvious need for urgency, and that's why urgency exists. There was no need for urgency here, because the order in council had already placed pretty good restrictions around access to semi-automatic weapons, and then there was time to do something much better. But another example that people throw up is I actually was involved in passing a law in 8 or 9 days so that the pubs could open for the Rugby World Cup. But again, the Rugby World Cup was 2 weeks away, and no one was going to be able to watch many of the games at pubs, and all we did was change the hours that pubs were allowed to open anyway by a couple of hours. So there's times you can use urgency. It's part of our parliamentary process for a reason, but what we've seen in the last couple of weeks, I think, is an abuse of parliamentary process.
So in the example that you gave where you were involved, you don't think there'd be any concerns from people that they were missing out on giving their opinion on that particular issue, as opposed to the issue that faces us now?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. I mean, one is, what's the genuine urgency? So, you know, as I've said, there was genuine urgency in this case. But two is the complexity, and three is the extent of the effect. So, I mean, the complexities here are enormous, because we want to be safe from gun crime, but it's not clear that simply banning the weapons will achieve that. I think it's very possible that what will happen is that the good people will hand in their weapons, the bad people won't. In fact, the government's already said it's going to give compensation if your weapon's illegal, but no compensation if your weapon's illegal, which I just think is madness. And, you know, we'll actually end up with a bigger black market of totally unregulated weapons out there than we had before. And so we could actually be in a more dangerous situation than we were on March 15 as a result of this law. And that's because, you know, it's complex. You change one thing and a whole lot of other people change their behaviour, and that's what they call unintended consequences. But the third thing is the importance of it. So, I mean, you've got, you know, it looks like now $1 billion worth of people's property. Now, it may be property that, you know, many BFM listeners, and I for that matter, don't really value. I'm not a gun person, but it is their property that has to be taken back. And, you know, that's a major impact. That $1 billion tells you how much people value it, and that this is not something that should be done lightly. People at the very least should be listened to first, but they won't.
Someone rang into my show last week and said, when we were talking about your opposition, and they said, I bet that if we were in some hypothetical situation where your end-of-life choice bill could have been pushed through in 10 days, that you would have supported it. Would you?
Well, I think it's really unfortunate that people take cheap shots like that. No, I wouldn't. And the proof is that I've done the exact opposite. When the end-of-life choice bill was passed, I actually asked Parliament for it to be heard over 9 months rather than 6 months. And then when the public submissions were due, there were people saying, look, hold on, we haven't had time. So I then asked Parliament to give another 2 weeks before people had to get their submissions in, so everyone had a chance to do that. And then at the end of the 9 months and 2 weeks that we had landed on, another six-month extension was made. And then, when the Christchurch tragedy happened and the bill was due to be reported back, I asked Parliament to have it extended again so that there'd be proper time for the Select Committee to consider it. So far from trying to rush my end-of-life choice bill, I've actually agreed to it being extended 4 times. So to say that, you know, I don't believe in due process and don't care about it when it comes to my own bill, well, you know, not only is your guy or girl calling and taking a cheap shot, but they probably need to do a bit more research before they take their cheap shots.
Onto the bill itself, the Justice Select Committee has returned its findings, which don't really make many recommendations. Does that mean that the bill's perfect? There weren't improvements to be made? What does it actually tell us?
It tells you a few things. I mean, first of all, a lot of it is just down to parliamentary process. So because this is a conscience bill, 120 people have their own view on it. And what the committee decided was, well, we don't think it's right for 8 people who happen to be on the Justice Committee, because a select committee is just a small subgroup of MPs. We don't think it's right for 8 MPs to kind of knock the bill around and change it up and then send it back to the Parliament for others to vote on with a whole lot of decisions already made. So what the committee said is, look, we will make a bunch of minor technical changes that don't change the overall intention of the bill, but do change the way it's worded so we make sure that, you know, what the bill says is actually what we think it says. And that's what select committees should do, by the way. That's why, you know, if you try and do a select committee process in 7 days, you risk missing things, and I predict there will be problems with this arms amendment bill. The next thing that happens is that there are bigger issues to be debated. For instance, I wrote a 70-page report on what submitters had said back in December, and I said, look, on balance, having listened to everybody, I think we're going to have to make this bill narrower. It can't be for people with grievous and irremediable